Today is November 5th, 2014, and this is episode number 279 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, reluctant railroad engineer. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Yeah, you are the reluctant railroad engineer. I remember the song about that. Brian's the reluctant railroad engineer, and he's so sad.
I often cried myself to sleep with that song.
Yeah, I totally understand. But hey, trains, woo woo.
Yeah, just sitting across the street from me, just on for hours, just not moving, but making lots of noise. Just in time for us to record the show. So if the show's a little bit noisier this week, I do apologize.
Well, Brian, you know, they have to leave those big engines running, because if they don't, they can't charge their iPads and play Angry Birds. Just saying.
that's probably the case. Now, speaking of playing Angry Birds.
Yes, do tell.
I bet you're wondering where I'm going with this one.
Yeah, you know, I'm just along for the ride.
Because I'm assuming we'll be able to play Angry Birds on our Apple Watches.
You know, I'm assuming so too. You know what I think would be great is collaborative Angry Birds, where you get a bunch of people together and you flick the bird from your watch and it has to hit bricks on someone else's.
Oh, that would actually be... But if you're gonna be blind, it'd be like a combination between Blind Man's Bluff and Angry Birds,
which is basically how I play Angry Birds. Anyhow, have you seen my scores?
I have, so I'm not gonna argue.
Yeah. So all right, we just found the scenario to sell Apple Watches like hotcakes.
Yes, Blind Man's Bluff, Angry Birds. So we did have a little bit of Apple Watch news in the last week since our last show. And one bit of news is a story you covered this morning, a rumor coming out of France, right? From
right.
iGen, is that right?
Yeah, from iGen. And they have insider sources. And to be fair to iGen, they have a reasonable track record with their sources. Mm-hmm. So their sources this time are saying that the stainless steel Apple Watch will be priced at $500, and that the Apple Watch Edition, which is the gold one, will be priced starting somewhere between $4,000 and $5,000, which then totally supports the notion that the Apple Watch Sport is going to be the $349 watch, and that's the one with the aluminum body and uses X-Ion glass.
That's the one we know for sure, because Apple specifically told people during the hands-on event that the $349 one was the Sport Edition.
Right, yeah. So the pricing fits well with that, I think.
Yeah, I like this rumor, not because it's iGen and not because they're claiming inside sources. I like it because it fits with my own preconceptions. And really, that's sort of my benchmark. Yeah, it's my benchmark.
Yeah. And when I heard the numbers, I thought, okay, yeah, this makes sense. That seems totally reasonable.
Yeah, I like the $500 price point for the steel watch. I'm sorry, not because I want to spend $500 on another watch, but because with everything that Apple is doing, and with the aluminum and non-sapphire glass one starting at $350, $500 actually seems like a very logical price point for the stainless steel and sapphire version.
Yeah, I agree. Yep, totally fits for me.
But there's one aspect of this story that I personally would put it at 100% untrue.
And I know exactly which part you're talking about. That's the other part where they said, and these will be on the market before Valentine's Day.
Yeah, and we just had Angela Arendt, Apple's new senior vice president of retail, explain to us that the iWatch, or actually explain to her retail employees, that the Apple Watch is coming in the spring, quote unquote.
Which would put it after Valentine's Day.
Well after Valentine's Day. I think spring starts March 20th this year.
Yeah, and year. And even though it's leap year, I'm just running with random things I've said in the past several days. February 14th is still Valentine's Day, which is still before spring.
Right, exactly. An Apple executive has gone semi-public with different information. It obviously calls into question the rest of the report too. But I still like that pricing. I still like, they said $4,000 for the gold one?
$4,000. Yes, starting somewhere between $4,000 and $5,000.
Yeah, I still like that pricing for the gold watch, the various gold watch, because there's a yellow gold and a rose gold version, right?
Yes.
I'm suddenly doubting.
No, you're right.
And then I like the $500, you know, probably $499 price point for the stainless steel model, at least for, you know, whatever the base band is going to be for the stainless steel model. All that pricing that really does work for me.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I think that pricing fits really well with the sport starting at $349, $350, whatever. Yeah, but I'm with Angela on the launch because she's in a position to know.
Right. Yeah.
And why would she tell her own retail staff a date or a launch window that was completely wrong? Because that does them no good whatsoever.
Well, you know, misdirection.
Yeah, but...
That's the ultimate misdirection, actually, misdirecting your own employees.
Yeah, that doesn't seem very effective. Well, it would be effective, but it doesn't seem very productive.
Yeah, probably not. Now, of course, the issue here is what the definition of spring is, because spring does start in on March 20th. Now, Tim Cook told us, and Apple told us, that the Apple Watch would be launched in, quote-unquote, early 2015. Now, most people interpret early to be the first 3 months, the first quarter.
Right.
And... most people. I mean, I think I've heard who was it that was just quibbling over the idea that was it Dave? Dave was making the Dave Hamilton was making the argument that for Apple early means any time in the first half, and I'm not down with that actually.
You know, I can see where Dave would think that's totally reasonable. I'm with you on this one where I don't think that's right. But sure, I could see a situation where Apple stretches early to mean the first half of the year. I don't think Apple would do that with this watch, especially because there are other products that are out now and are coming out soon that could eat into market share, even though I wouldn't consider them direct competitors. But if someone gets tired of waiting for the Apple Watch and they find a different wrist-worn device that they're like, yeah, actually, this will work fine for me, and I'm going to save $100.
I don't think I'm with you on that one.
Well, that's okay. I'm fine with you being wrong. I'm not saying this would be a significant number of sales that would be lost.
Well, before we move on to that, though, let's just finish up the point on the time frame, because it turns out that there is an 11-day window of spring that would also that would be in the first quarter. Now, it is also possible that when Apple said early 2015, that Apple actually meant the first half. I don't think that's the case, but that certainly is possible. But it is there's nothing in what Angela Arendt's told Apple retail employees that necessarily contradicts Apple's 2015 plans. It doesn't. What she said does not necessarily mean that anything has changed at Apple.
And actually, I don't think anything has changed. I think she has merely narrowed down the launch window a little bit more for everyone.
You know, the question is, in that Apple knows this stuff's going to come out, right? You know, when Angela tells retail employees something, that is going to make it to some journalistic, some media outlet.
Of course, they know that.
Right, so one can assume that this was actually not only for employees, but information meant to shape expectations in the public and the media and therefore on Wall Street.
I think that's a reasonable interpretation as well. Apple is well known for being able to manipulate information to their benefit.
Yes. And yeah, and then some, right?
Yes. And then some.
And then some. All right. Well, so I think we are in short in agreement. $500 for this for the entry level band and the stainless steel watch. Which yes. I'm not sure which band is going to be the entry level band.
I'm assuming
for the stainless steel version.
I'm assuming it's going to be the synthetic band. Not a leather band.
Oh, yeah, probably not a leather band, and probably not certainly not one of the metal bands.
Right.
Watch bands, folks may not realize that watch bands are not cheap. I mean, they can be cheap to make, but when they're cheap to make, you get a cheap watch band.
And that's not what Apple's going to do.
Correct. Apple has been very, it's very obvious this thing is this, not this thing. It's very obvious the Apple Watch is on a style basis competing in the fashion world. And that means that on a style basis, it's competing against Switzerland, not China, not even Japan. And the deployment clasp, a watch band has to take a lot of abuse. You know, you just think, it's easy just to think that a watch is, it's what the heck? It's just wrap it around your wrist, you're good to go. But it's so much more than that. The deployant clasp, for instance, has to not break down at its points of contact where it actually connects. The magnet thing that they're doing with one of the watch bands is has to always work, and it has to be just right, and it can't, the magnet can't be too strong. I mean, there's a lot of finesse that goes into that. The little mesh steel, do you remember the mesh steel band that they were doing?
Mm-hmm.
A similar, what's that called? It's called it's an Italian name for that kind of mesh. Oh golly, I can't remember right now, but there's a Breitling band that is really popular with Breitling owners right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's made of that same material and used or secondhand on the gray market. Like on eBay, for instance, those regularly go for $500 just for the band.
Wow.
And leather bands with a proper deployant clasp can be $200, $300, $400, $500, $600, $700. I mean, and it's not all because of the materials, and it's not all because they're handmade, and it's not all because it's got a name like Zenith or Breitling or Patek Philippe. It's not all because of that. It's because these actually have to be really, really well made, and they have to be well designed. So my point is this: the bands that Apple is doing are competing against bands that are priced They're probably going to be priced even higher. But you know, when you end up seeing that one of Apple's watch bands cost $150 or $200 or $400, there's a reason for it.
And there will be all kinds of people that freak out about that, and there will be bad media about that, and that will be coming from people that don't know. I'm glad that we're having this discussion now so that I do know.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, when you said the synthetic one, there's no way the steel watch is going to ship with the same band as the sport watch.
Look at Tim Cook's wrist in the events that he's been at recently.
Yeah.
He's wearing a stainless steel watch with a synthetic white band.
The same band that goes on the sport watch?
It sure looks like it.
Well, that doesn't mean that that's what it's going to ship with. I mean, for there's a couple of reasons for that. One, Apple's going to want to differentiate. Two, Apple is the sport band, the sport Apple Watch sport band is designed for a different use case than the stainless steel version. And for those two, I would say a 0% chance that they will both ship with the same default entry level band.
Well, okay, so even if they aren't shipping with the same band specifically, they are both, I think, going to ship with a synthetic material band.
That is possible. I can't say anything against that. So, in the meanwhile, Microsoft has introduced speaking of bands, the band.
Right, which is a product that I'm actually really intrigued by. I wouldn't consider the Microsoft Band a direct competitor to Apple Watch, because they look very different, and while they do offer many similar features, it's not like, as far as
the band's features are a tiny subset,
right,
of Apple Watch features, a tiny subset. The band is like right now one of the best fitness trackers out there.
It sure looks like it.
But I don't think it's even close to a competitor for Apple Watch per se. It's only a competitor in that it's also designed to be worn on the wrist. It's a competitor to Apple Watch in the same way that Apple Watch is a competitor to high-end mechanical watches, in that there's no direct competition, but they're all competing for the same space.
Okay, that's an excellent way to frame it. I love that. Yes, I think you totally nailed it. But if you're someone that's looking at the product just for fitness tracking features, then the Microsoft Band exceeds what Apple's offering through Apple Watch, or will be offering, because the Microsoft Band does track a lot more. So, you know, in that sense, that's a really cool thing.
It's actually tracking more than we know that Apple Watch is tracking?
It's tracking a lot more than we know about Apple Watch.
It's tracking more than Apple has so far said the Apple Watch will track.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so explain that to us.
Okay, so the Microsoft Band, in addition to the usual things, how many steps have you taken today? How far have you walked? How many flights of stairs have you climbed? It's also doing sleep tracking, which at this point it appears as if Apple Watch may not do that, because it needs to be charged every 24 hours.
Right.
The Microsoft Band does have a heart rate monitor, which Apple Watch has, but it also has a galvanic skin sensor and a skin temperature sensor, which can be used for gauging stress, both like emotional stress and physical stress. It has a UV sensor so that it can gauge sun exposure issues, which is actually kind of interesting.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Especially in climates like where I live, where it's higher altitude, and so you inherently have more sun exposure. So anyhow, you have this nice mix of sensors that appear to go beyond what Apple is watching or Apple is offering through Apple Watch right now. And of course, when it actually ships, there may be more sensors than we've been told about
on the Apple Watch.
Yes, on the Apple Watch. Right. Microsoft banned is shipping already.
It actually seems to me to be likely that Apple hasn't told us everything the Apple Watch will do.
That's what I'm hoping.
For what that's worth.
I hope you're right, because I would like to see the Apple Watch tracking more than it appears that it does today.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting, Jeff. I think that this first version of the Apple Watch, which I want to say again, I think I've said it on this show. I know I've said it elsewhere. I cannot recommend the gold version of the Apple Watch. I don't care what its price is. And it's probably, if it's $2,000, okay, that's fine. But it's probably going to be that in that 4 to 5 range. And it could conceivably be even higher, as much as 10 grand. But I cannot recommend it, because it will not maintain its value. None of these devices are going to maintain their value. Not like a mechanical watch, which is the kinds of watches that watches in these price points are usually competing with.
Yeah, and if Apple is planning on running upgrade or update cycles like they have with say the iPhone and the iPad, then yeah, you're looking at a device that gets replaced with a newer, better, thinner.
Yeah, this is going to be the worst Apple Watch ever made. that it's yeah. True. Don't get me wrong. That's largely true for any line of devices. That first one is usually going to be the worst one ever made. But with the Apple Watch, we expect our iPhones to depreciate. And they do. They hold their value much better than any competing device. But they do depreciate. And with the Apple Watch, anyone who buys one should expect it to depreciate. The thing is, on the gold one, the gold one's value, I think, is going to plummet with each new successor version. Because it's going to have to do with how much of a materials profit Apple's trying to make off the gold one. We've seen estimates that there's roughly $1,200 worth of gold in that case, and that was based strictly on like super educated guesstimates from jewelry experts.
Okay, and they're in a position where they should be able to offer reasonably good estimates.
Yeah, exactly. If they're off, it's going to be by a couple $100 in either direction, I would assume. And of course, we don't know the value. Apple did invent its own alloy for these gold versions. I think they actually invented their own alloy for the stainless steel version too. But we don't know what the value of that's going to be. Probably nothing, to be honest, on the commercial market. And the Apple Watch, as each new generation comes out, there's not going to be any reason to have that first generation watch once the third and fourth generation watches are around. And because of that, these gold versions, I personally think they're going to become worth their gold value.
That's fascinating.
So admittedly, there's a floor, and that's terrific. But if you're spending $4,000 on a watch that's going to be worth $1,200, or let's ignore inflation for the time being, right? Because inflation has erodes the value of that $4,000 you would have spent anyway. So let's just ignore that for now.
Okay.
If you're going to spend $4,000 on a watch that's going to be worth $1,200 in 3 years or 2 years or 4 years or 5 years or even a year, I cannot recommend that. When you spend $4,000 on a gold mechanical watch, it's going to be worth $3,000 next year, and then it's probably going to hover there for a few years, but then the value is actually going to start to actually, you can't really get a gold mechanical watch for $4,000, to be honest. You're looking at, 10.
But we'll pretend for a moment.
Yeah. But anyway, the point is that you know it loses a little bit of value once it's not new, but over time that value actually comes back and eventually actually usually exceeds its purchase value. That will never be the case for the Apple Watch. I do not see that being the case. No one's going to collect these. Well, people could collect them, but no one's going to be wearing. No one's going to wear a first generation Apple Watch in 10 years. Probably not even 5 years.
Now, okay, so here's a thought that I just had. And not being a watch guy, I totally get that I might be completely off base here. But what if Apple is looking at the Apple Watch as a product similar to a MacBook Pro or an iPad, where there is just an inherent upgrade cycle where people accept the fact that the device is going to depreciate?
Well, yeah, I'm totally okay with that, but I'm not okay with spending $4,000 doing it. I'm okay spending $500 doing it. But the thing is that strategy makes sense when you're looking at a device of a few hundred dollars. And don't get me wrong. I know that there are a lot of folks for whom $500 on any kind of watch, period, is an insane amount of money to spend. I get that. The whole world isn't going to own an Apple Watch.
True. I think the most expensive watch I have ever purchased cost, probably $40.
Yeah, but what's the most expensive fitness tracker that you would buy? Because I know that you get most of them free because companies send them to you.
It's $300 range.
It's the band, right?
And the band, yeah, and that's $200 for the band.
So it's a $300 one.
There's a couple of the very specialized focused ones, like from Basis.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
But for general use, $200.
But your point was that what if Apple is looking at the Apple Watch with that same sort of upgrade cycle for users as its traditional devices, right?
Yeah.
Again, that makes sense at the $350 range. It makes sense at the $500 range. To me, it makes zero sense at the $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 range. That doesn't work for me, especially for a device that is jewelry. See, that's the thing about jewelry. You know, this is so interesting what Apple is doing. Apple has positioned this device as the most functional piece of wearable technology on the planet, designed to look and feel like a piece of jewelry, right? But the thing is when you buy a piece of jewelry, you not only might wear that jewelry for years, you might well hand it down to your kids when it's a special piece of jewelry, right? When it's an expensive piece of jewelry, when it's a watch. Watches get handed down from generation to generation. Watches certainly get sold at the very least by heirs, or by the people who actually owned it. They get sold because they have value. But what value will a $4,000, $5,000 Apple Watch have after two successive generations of Apple Watches have come out? And I don't think they'll have any value.
I wonder if there's going to be a trade-in option.
Could be, but it shouldn't be much more than the price of the gold. That's why I think that these things will quickly revert to their value in gold.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's very possible.
I also know that there's people who will buy these. I'm not saying that Apple's making a mistake in releasing it. Because there are people who will buy them. There are markets where conspicuous consumption for the sake of conspicuous consumption is all the better. And there are people who like gold watches, and I'm totally okay with that. I just can't recommend doing it from a value standpoint. To me, the $500 watch or the $350 sport watch, those are the ones that are going to make this, or that are going to make sense to buy. Those are the ones that, that you know, two generations from now, you'll probably be able to get half of what you paid for it. And that's going to be okay.
Yeah, which is what I expect from, say, an iPad.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. iPads and iPhones and Macs, you know, they all hold their value insanely well. So yeah, I don't know. Am I clear on the fact that I'm not, it's not that I'm criticizing the gold watch. I just don't.
You don't see it as an investment. If it's something you want to buy because it makes you feel good,
just
drop your 5K on it and be happy.
But just know that you're going to lose most of that money. And maybe I'm making a mistake here. If I'm making a mistake, it's from thinking of the Apple Watch like the mechanical watches that compete above that $2,000 price range. And maybe I shouldn't be doing that. But I you know, if you spend $20,000 on a watch, if you spend $10,000 on a watch today, your watch is going to hold that value shy an economic collapse of unprecedented magnitude.
And if that does happen, the value of your watch is probably really low on your priority list.
Yeah, it's probably pretty much moot. So, but that just won't be the case for the gold iWatch, the Apple Watch. God, I cannot get rid of iWatch out of my head. So funny.
That is funny. I'm surprised at how quickly I transitioned into Apple Watch.
Here. That's good. All right. So now back to the Microsoft band. You were explaining to, I think when I went on this massive derail, you were explaining to us the features that it had.
Right. And so the features that we didn't get to, it's the smartwatch type features that people are kind of just expecting from smartwatch devices, where it does link back up to your smartphone and it can show you text messages and emails and give you alerts to calls and all of that sort of stuff. You know, so it's nice to see those features in there too, because then it makes the device more useful just all the way around. But Apple, they are already far exceeding what the Microsoft band can do on that front. And Apple Watch hasn't even shipped yet. The place though, where Microsoft is, I think, really getting how to make these products successful, where Apple is surprisingly not, is cross-platform. So when the band shipped, Microsoft announced it. It said it's available. And by the way, it not only does it work with Windows phones, it works with the iPhone and Android phones, just right out the gate. And I thought that was a really smart move, because it really expands the potential customer base.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. This seems like such a natural segue to our second topic,
which is really weird for us.
Well played, sir. Well played. Well played. Because, you know, when Satya Nadella took over from Steve Ballmer, I was very quick to say that I thought he might have the ability to turn Microsoft around.
And then you also voice concern that he's just part of the same old school and things wouldn't change.
But I was hopeful.
Yes, you were hopeful. Yes, you were.
And in the last few months, but in particular the last few weeks, we've seen lots of examples, not lots of examples. We've seen a couple of examples at the very least, though, of Microsoft truly thinking differently than the old Microsoft.
Yeah, and the band launch is a perfect example of that. Right out the gate, it's cross-platform.
Yes, it's cross-platform right out of the gate. Under Steve Ballmer,
that would not have happened.
The band would have been some kind of effort to get people to use Windows Phone.
Yes, and I think the feature set, well, okay, now granted, the band was probably already in development on some level before Steve Ballmer left.
Correct.
But with Satya at the helm, I think that the path that the band ended up taking is different from the vision that Steve Ballmer had.
Yes, Steve Ballmer was saddled by the desperate desire to perpetuate the Windows and Office hegemonies. Hegemony, actually. The two of them would make a hegemony. And definitely. I love it when I go on these little pedantic asides.
And you notice I don't even bother trying to stop you anymore. I just let you go.
Thank you, I guess. He was saddled by this, right? And he was, you know, everything that Microsoft did was this bizarre, this misguided effort to maintain the relevancy of Windows beyond what customers were clearly saying that they wanted, and to continue to have one product extend the other, like, you know, Office was held to Surface on tablets.
Mm-hmm.
We had the really crappy what was that first version called? For iPhone. It was really gimpy.
Oh yeah. And I don't remember the name, but yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah,
you
don't remember the name. That's so telling.
Yeah,
that's I don't remember it either.
It is basically a Microsoft document viewing app.
Yeah, it was more like a reader than it was anything else.
Yes.
And Microsoft put all this effort into, you know, this disaster known as Windows 8 with the interface formerly known as Metro. And you know, with this whole thing where they were trying to, you know, like, you know, Windows 8 had one foot on tablets and it had one foot in the desktop space, and it was awful. And the first touch version of Office was out for Surface, and Microsoft limited it to Surface. In fact, they were giving it away with Surface because they thought that people were just clamoring to have Office. Office on a tablet device.
They were, but the tablet was the iPad.
Right. They weren't clamoring to have Office on a tablet device. They were clamoring to have it on an iPad, just to clarify both of us there. And you know, and again, it was just a disaster. No one cared. No one cared about that stupid keyboard. I'll just for the sake of consistency, I'll point out that how baffling it is that Steve Ballmer and his team could look at the success of the iPad and have their takeaway be that what people really wanted was a keyboard. That's so idiotic. It's just it's bafflingly stupid. Boy, that iPad, yes. Man, that thing is just a huge hit. So we should compete with it by releasing a keyboard with a tablet with the keyboard.
But they even bungled that because the keyboard, instead of just bundling it as part of the package, is a necessary tool that you had to buy separately. You know, it'd be like Apple selling a MacBook Pro, and for an extra $300, they'll attach a display to your laptop.
Wow. It was $100.
For the
keyboard.
Yeah, but if it's a display, it'd be more. Well, but my point is, it was a critical component for the product, and it was sold as an accessory instead of as an actual piece of...
Because they were trying to hold the price down. Right? It's just all these bad decisions made to meet Microsoft's goals rather than releasing a product intended to meet customer needs. One disaster after another.
And contrast that with the Microsoft Band, which looks to me to be a device where Microsoft sat down and thought, okay, what can we do to make a device that meets consumers' needs?
Plus, what I really think is interesting is that Microsoft probably had some kind of intel on what Apple was working on. They probably didn't have details on what the Apple Watch was going to be.
But they had some good ideas.
And they probably had some people saying, you know, if Apple's going to release any kind of smartwatch, is probably what they were all thinking of it as, right? If Apple's going to release a smartwatch, it's probably going to do all this interfacey stuff that's really good. And they're probably going to like completely rethink the way, you know, an interface should be because it's this new form factor. So let's not try to do that because we're probably not going to do it as well. So instead, let's actually tackle this device from the fitness tracking angle, which is what most people are using the wrist for a smartwatch these days.
Which I thought was brilliant. Now, here's where the problem comes in. And this is just old school Microsoft. Instead of focusing on what this device is and what it's really designed to do well, they hype up the secondary features, which is communication with your smartphone.
And if really? You watch, did they do that?
Oh, totally. Yeah. If you look at the videos that they have for the product, the fact that it has all of this incredible horsepower for tracking and monitoring your health and fitness is practically a side note. I found that part to be fascinating because I'm looking at this. And I'm like, holy crap, this is an amazing fitness and health tracking device. And yet they're promoting the fact that you can look at email messages. And if you have a Windows phone here, this is a Windows only feature. It uses Cortana, which is their version of Siri. So you can talk to the watch and schedule appointments and stuff like that. And those are the kinds of things that they keyed in on with their videos. And I'm like, man, way to go all the way to third base and then stop.
Yeah. That's some old Microsoft right there.
Oh yeah. Clearly old Microsoft happening right there.
But there's another thing that Microsoft has done in just the last couple of days. And that was add Dropbox support to Office for iOS.
Which is just shocking because Microsoft has their OneDrive and that's what they're really pushing hard for cloud storage. So to openly embrace a competing product like that, I mean, that's a big thing.
And to actually, they actively worked with Dropbox to do it. And in fact, there's some editing features now that'll be built into Dropbox. So you can actually do some edits on Office documents within the Dropbox application. This is a two-way integration.
This is not the Microsoft that Steve Ballmer ran.
No, it's not, because the Microsoft that Steve Ballmer ran would have used Office for iPad, you know, if assuming he even finally released it, right? Mm-hmm. He would have used that as a bludgeon to force people onto OneDrive. And that's what Microsoft did for decades. It's you know, all these artificial efforts to make you use, you know, it's leverage and extend. It's more when you're leveraging your monopoly in one space to extend market share in another space. That's actually illegal under the Sherman Antitrust Act. But
was Microsoft.
Yeah, that was Microsoft's modus operandi for decades, and it's what got them in trouble in the 90s and whatever. That's another story. But that's definitely what Steve Ballmer would have done, and it's not what Satya Nadella. It is how they released Office for iOS, but it's not. I mean, this is an update, and I think it's fascinating. I think that it shows changes. I think that it shows that Microsoft is thinking differently. I very much do.
I'm totally with you on that. I'm seeing these things, and okay, look at what we've been talking about. These are not conversations we could have even fathomed having a year ago. Mm-mm. Like me sitting here being really excited about a fitness tracker that Microsoft designed in-house.
Right. The times they are changing. So, you know, this really, you said this. I want to give credit where it's due. So last week we asked whether or not Apple was the new Microsoft. And our angle there was not that Apple was behaving like Microsoft, but that Apple apparently was beginning to have the same sort of weight of inevitability that Microsoft was known for at least 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was our point last week. So is Microsoft the new Apple that's all nimble and innovative and willing to think differently about stuff?
Well, if the band and the Dropbox deal are any indication, then yeah, Microsoft in that respect has become the new Apple.
Balderdash. Balderdash. Microsoft might be thinking differently, but they're so far, far from being the new Apple.
Oh, well,
anything like Apple.
Well, they are definitely not like Apple. However, in this sense, they are doing an Apple-like thing.
Well, actually, they're not doing an Apple-like thing. Apple still hasn't embraced Dropbox, for instance. I mean, they're doing stuff from the standpoint of trying to meet customers' needs by being flexible and working with third parties, and I don't really think that describes Apple.
Okay, on that point, you totally have me. There's no way I can defend that.
But you know, just from the standpoint of recognizing that, what would make me think that Microsoft was the new Apple would be when Microsoft released a product that threatened Windows. That would be Microsoft being the new Apple, and that ain't. I just don't think that's going to happen. Satya Nadella or no Satya Nadella.
No, that's not going to happen. But looking at products in an innovative way, looking at products outside of the traditional button-up shirt and cufflinks world, that's the Apple way. And that's what I see Microsoft doing with the band and with the Dropbox deal.
Well, at the very least, again, I'm not going to go that far, but at the very least, Microsoft is showing new ways of approaching stuff that is, I think, inherently superior to the old way. The old way worked for Microsoft for a long time, but it ran its course.
Yes.
And Satya Nadella's big challenge is coming up with Microsoft to do things in new ways. And assuming these two things aren't a fluke, right? The band and working with Dropbox, assuming those aren't flukes within Microsoft, we may be seeing more new and cool stuff from the company. At least I hope so.
I hope so too. And I know it sounds really weird that I'm sitting here getting excited about Microsoft, but there you go. And part of that excitement comes from the fact that if Microsoft is doing things that really kind of push that envelope, then that means that their competitors, including Apple, have to stay on their top game to compete.
Yes, and hopefully their top game is going to be better than our top game. because I wouldn't wish that on many companies.
I see what you did there.
All right, I do have one more thing. I went to Pepcom in San Francisco last week.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I saw was a company called Fitbug. They're not a new company. They've actually been around since 2005, which is an eternity.
In the tech world, yeah.
In the fitness space in particular.
Yeah, and they're doing like 700 in dog years.
Something like that. 630 at least. And they're doing a product called the Orb. which is competing at the $50 level for fitness tracking.
And that's compelling. There are many products that are competing at that price point, but a lot of those are just not that good. But based on what I've seen so far, I'm looking at the Orb and I'm thinking, okay, this has potential to be a really cool product.
Yeah, it does. I mean, and the Orb itself is like, it's a little ball, right? And they've got a watch band that'll fit in, or you can just put it in your pocket, or you could put it on a necklace if that's what you wanted. I don't know, whatever you wanted to do with it. So, you know, they've decoupled the tracking with the form factor in which it's carried and allowed it to be usable in a variety of form factors.
And they're not the first company to do that, but at this price point, they're the first company I've heard of doing that.
And they released a new product this week through Target, where I think it's called What's Next. Does that ring a bell?
It does ring a bell.
I could have done my homework before we recorded, but I mean, you know,
Top Game.
Exactly. What this is, it's a series of informational cards designed on what you want to do. So it's like you have this fitness data. What next?
And that's a really smart idea because there's a lot of people that are just incessantly collecting data about themselves and not doing anything with it, which makes the data worthless.
Right. Generally speaking, well, I don't know. If you're monitoring your data and you're simply trying to make sure that you're more active than you were, that's...
You're doing something with the data at that point.
Fair enough. So, like, they have very, very specific applications for this. So, like, the one that sticks in my head is healthy baby bump, meaning fitness levels or activity levels designed for a pregnant woman to be healthy throughout her pregnancy.
So it's not a euphemism for getting a little action.
Correct. It's not.
Okay.
And there's like all sorts of different little plans that they have here. And the thing is, the thing that's really interesting to me is that it's being marketed under their name. They put it together. They're working with Target to do this. But you could actually take their ideas and use them with any fitness tracker. And they're the ones who pointed this out to me.
Huh. That's actually really smart.
Yeah. It is from a... Maybe. It's interesting. I mean, of course, they couldn't stop it from being used with any other fitness.
Right. And so if you know that it can be used with any other fitness device, then why not embrace that and find a way to make that a bonus for you,
right,
as the company?
Yeah, they've done that.
That makes sense.
So that was definitely a good meeting. And the other company that was really surprising to me was Creative. Remember the guys that make Sound Blaster? Remember when that was a thing?
That's old school. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're supporting the Mac now with some of their external products, because, you know, Creative always ignored the Mac because the Mac had 16-bit audio out of the box, and it has since the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the big thing about Sound Blaster was that it was high quality 16-bit sound for PCs, and so it became a really big gaming thing. And there were a lot of games that were built for the Sound Blaster, but of course you couldn't get the Sound Blaster for the Mac, and that was always an issue. And I just, you know, I stopped by their little booth and just, you know, what the heck, see what's up. Well, it turns out they're doing a lot of desktop amplifiers and DACs, digital audio converters, that are built with Mac support in mind. So now that, in other words, since they've entered a market where they don't need a PCI slot in your card, in your PC,
mm-hmm,
and because of that, they're paying attention to the Mac.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It was good to see.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I just wanted to catch you up on that.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jeff.
That was really swell.
We are, if anything, polite.
That's right. We are polite.
if anything. All right. I got Comcast coming, so let's wrap this baby up.
Okie doke. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. My Twitter name is Jay Gamut.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. That's Tim O'Brien. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.